Geek Actually is brought to you by listeners just like you. Thanks for your donations. If you want to get involved, send an email to feedback@geekactually.com or use the contact form on the website. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 26 for the 20th of February, 2009. I am David McVeigh, and joining me here today in studio is Jacob Oberman. Hello.
Hello, world. I'm Jacob Oberman.
Welcome back. You've been kind of hit and miss for the last few weeks.
Oh, yes. There's been a lot of catharsis in the past couple of weeks, but let me tell you, I've made a good poo, and I've come through.
Fair enough.
So I'm here now.
Fair enough. Well, it's good to have you back.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, first things first, a little bit of housekeeping. We're putting out a request. We started this last week. We're putting out requests for everybody to get on to those who are using iTunes to get into iTunes and post comments because
about
the show.
All
go
right.
Go and post comments on our show because we're trying to move up the iTunes ladder. We're trying to get into the featured category. So the more reviews we can get, the higher we would go.
We're trying to suck up to you.
Absolutely. Look, and if you have any comments or questions or requests or anything about the show, you can send them to feedback@geekactually.com or you can leave comments right onto the website at geekactually.com.
That's feedback@geekactually.com.
All right. So there's our housekeeping for the day.
Good.
All right. We're going to start with a little bit of tech news. We actually have both seen the films that we're going to review later, which is really
amazing.
It's amazing.
It's going to be a good show, guys.
I think so. All right. So first of all, on the tech news, now Jacob and I actually spoke about this just before the show, and this really is not relevant to anybody outside of Australia because they probably don't know who he is. But Saul Trujillo, who looks like badgers. We don't need no damn badgers from the Wild Bunch.
He looks like a relation of Cheech Marin.
Okay, so for those who don't know, he is the
CEO of Telstra Australia.
CEO of Telstra, which is our largest phone and bandwidth carrier. It used to be government owned, and
in those days it was called Telecom Australia.
Yeah, and now it's Telstra, and it's been privatized, and we've lost something. Anyway, that's a whole different story.
Let's not go there.
The funny thing about this story, I'm going to take my watch off because it keeps jingling against the table here. The funny thing about this story was, this is from news.com.au, and I'm sure it was also covered in the Sydney Morning Herald, but I thought this was really a cute story because I want bad things to fall onto Seoul because I really don't like Telstra very much. But according to this article, it says Telstra boss Saul Trujillo's mobile phone loaded with top secret software was stolen by a pickpocket. All right, to back this up a little bit.
Can I jump in very quickly? When Dave told me this before the show, when he said pickpocket, I thought he was talking about some software, you know. Then he had a phone and, you know, pickpocket went in and it's like, no, this guy actually had a pickpocket to pick up his phone.
And how did this happen? Because he was in Barcelona.
Barcelona.
And Barcelona is well known for its pickpocketing problems. Apparently, he is at the World Mobile Congress, which is being held in Barcelona, and he was given a mobile phone. Now, at this point, and this is kind of geek because it really is irrelevant, but at this point they don't know if he was given an HTC Touch Pro 2 or an HTC Touch Diamond 2, but neither of these phones are released yet. They're coming out in around June. So it's an advanced phone that hasn't come out yet.
Yep.
And apparently this phone was loaded with top secret software that isn't actually expected to be released until a year from now. They're talking it may have Windows Mobile 6.5 on it, which is the new Windows operating system for mobile phones. They're talking about the fact that this software will run Internet Explorer 6 in full fidelity. It's going to have all this wonderful stuff about one-touch access to music and mail and all this sort of stuff. Anyway, the point is that this is all very hush-hush software. He was given it to test it, obviously, because he's the CEO of Telstra. And the phone has been stolen.
It'd be funny if that pickpocket was hired by Apple, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be. But what's really funny, it's kind of tragic, really, is the analysts are now saying that Microsoft shares could be affected by this. They could take a drop in this because this is software. This is kind of like their ace in the hole for later in the year.
And David, isn't Saul Trujillo leaving Telstra?
You know, I keep hearing rumors on and off that he
with
is
a multi-million-dollar payout,
the,
no matter
the
when.
Golden parachute, which I never understood that term, because if you had a golden parachute, wouldn't it crush you on impact?
But yes.
You know, but yeah, look, it wouldn't surprise me. And the guy is an idiot. He's been holding Telstra back for years.
That's for sure.
And I will tell you another reason how he is holding Telstra back. Our second piece of tech news actually says this is in the Australian.com.au or Australian.news.com.au, I should say. Uh-huh. Basically saying Telstra says no to flat rates. Now, for the American for the American listeners out there, you're not going to understand this because we were actually talking to a colleague of ours earlier today who is in Florida, and we said, you guys don't have caps on your mobile. And he goes, of course we have caps. I'm with Comcast. We have 250 gigs a month.
It's like, oh, buoy for you.
Buoy for you. Here in Australia, we are capped to the eyeballs. I'm on a very expensive plan, and I'm capped at 40 gig a month. You know,
250 gigs. That's a quarter of a terabyte.
It's huge. Anyway, and you know what? In this day and age where we want to watch things like Hulu and so – oh, wait a minute. In Australia, we can't get Hulu. There you go. It's all just – we are at the asshole end of the world. We've said it many times before. And, you know, times, they got to change.
Stinky.
People like Saul Trujillo keep us back. In this particular case, at the same mobile convention that he was at, the head of a person who was representing Google and the head of Skype were basically talking about the fact that everything should be more transparent. There should be flat caps and blah blah.
Wait, here in Australia?
This is around the world, everywhere.
All right.
Basically,
right.
Saying
this is at this mobile convention that Saul was at that had his phone,
where he had his phone stolen. That's right. And basically, they're all saying that if we really want to move data along, we have to make it transparent so people aren't stung by huge data costs and stuff. Well, Saul came forward. The people that were talking, by the way, I'm just going to find their names just so we have their names here. It was Google Engineering Vice President Vic Gundotra and Skype CEO Josh Silverman.
Yep.
All right, just so you have some names.
Yep.
Because Saul's comment when they said, one of them actually said, to drive mobile internet growth, we need simple, affordable, and easy to understand data plans. A perfectly reasonable thing.
Absolutely.
Considering that Skype now represents something like 8% of all voice traffic.
8%? That's enormous.
It's
every
enormous.
Time I turn on Skype, you look at the amount of people on, you know, 16 million people use it. 16 million
Absolutely.
Users at any one time.
So, I mean, this is the future, and the future really is going to be IP related. It's going that way, okay? Now, so it's very makes sense that they would say that we really need it flat, affordable, and understandable because the average person doesn't want to have to worry about all this. Saul Trujillo's answer to this was, I think it's interesting what Josh said. This is a direct quote. But I have a responsibility to make money. So screw the user, screw everything else. It's about making money.
He's going to go, and Telstra is going to go if they're not careful.
You know what? There's a very special place in hell for people like Saul Trujillo.
Absolutely.
Anyway, if you believe in that sort of thing.
This is hell. I'm the devil. How do you do?
All right. So that's our Saul Trujillo stories, and we will leave him alone at this point. But I got to tell you, if you haven't seen a picture of Saul Trujillo, he really does look like the character from Wild Bunch going, "Badgers, we don't need no damn badgers."
Please, 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 everyone, please, Google him. Google. Images. Google images.
There's also something vaguely.
Trujillo.
He actually looks.
Trujillo.
In this picture, Trujillo. Doesn't he look vaguely like some sort of world dictator?
He looks like Saddam Hussein?
He does a bit. Anyway, it's very sad. It's very sad.
Moving right along, David.
Moving right along. Now, Pirate Bay. Mm-hmm. For those who use the Pirate Bay, which is almost everybody, at some point.
It's so endemic in culture, isn't it?
If you've been to the Pirate Bay, you'll notice that people have been complaining and yelling, including Microsoft and Rhea and so forth, have all been complaining for years, basically saying cease and desist. And their basic answer to that was, get fucked, because they were in Sweden and they were covered by different laws and they believe that they weren't doing anything wrong and they literally have snubbed their nose at authority for this entire time. And good for them, okay? Well, it looks like they're finally being taken to court. It says here in an article in news.com.au.
How long has the Pirate Bay been around? About 10 years?
It says since 2003.
There you go. So it's been around going for five, on to 6 years. I mean, look, Kazaa was around for only a couple of years before they got hold over the console.
Yeah. Well, Kazaa was a different thing, though, because Kazaa was just straight file sharing.
Mm.
The Pirate Bay is a BitTorrent tracker site. They're not hosting
Kazaa
any
wasn't
files.
Torrent, was
no,
it?
No, 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 no. And the Pirate Bay has always been by the argument that they don't actually host any of these files. Mm. All they are doing is putting links for people to connect to each other.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the difference also with the Pirate Bay is that you actually have contributors. In other words, there are, you know, some bands like Nine Inch Nails, etc., that actually...
I believe they launched one of their albums, actually.
On the Pirate Bay.
Nine Inch Nails. In fact, in this article, they actually go on and say that some bands and media outlets have officially released their content on Pirate Bay, such as Nine Inch Nails. The band deliberately leaked the album Ghosts 1 to 4 online and then made 1.7 million in the first week when they finally put it on sale.
Marvelous.
Because, of course, it had all that prepress and had all that all that forward.
Yep.
In fact, Nine Inch Nails are not my particular flavor of music.
They're pretty hard.
But they did provide the music for the original game Quake, which I have high geek respect for.
Did they?
Yeah, they did the music for Quake. But I do have a lot of respect for them because they have actually bucked the entire system. I did say buck.
They
have bucked the entire system by saying we are going to release our own stuff online.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done. In fact, I believe they gave their last album away for free.
Right. So, which a few people have done to limited success at this point in time. Tell me something, Dave. What are the parameters that they're being charged over?
Okay.
Does it actually tell you?
Back to this. It says that the team behind BitTorrent Tracker, the Pirate Bay, facing court over internet piracy. The four people who run the world's largest BitTorrent tracker will face court in Sweden this week in the latest legal battle pitting the entertainment industry against file-sharing advocates. Now, it says that they are being charged with promoting violations by other people's of... Sorry, this is a mouthful.
Go on.
Promoting violations by other people of laws protecting royalties. Is that not the most convoluted charge you've ever heard?
So, hang on a minute. This is the same sort of charge as... the Fifth Amendment, in a sense, because you're encouraging people to break the law, or you don't want to self-incriminate, for example. If you go into a court of law and you say, look, I'm going to plead the fifth because you're asking for evidence, but I can give you that evidence, but that evidence may well incriminate me, so I'm going to plead the fifth. It's a similar sort of...
It says here that the music industry, or actually the movie, music, and video game industry...
But people have a choice. You know, you say that this is encouraging me to go and do it. I have the choice to say no. I'm not going to go and do it.
Look, the entire thing is. I mean, okay, yes, the Pirate Bay openly snubs its nose at copyright law and everything else. But technically, and this has been a long-standing battle with the whole BitTorrent thing. Technically, are they breaking the law? They're not hosting any of these files. All they're doing is
users who are hosting the files.
That's right. It's users sharing stuff. All they're doing is basically putting a situation where the users can find each other, right?
Look, this has been discussed again and again.
But this is exactly what Napster got done for.
Yeah.
Napster got closed down.
That's right. Napster and Kazaa.
So,
Does Kazaa still operate, but they're now a commercial?
Napster's now commercial. Yeah. And it fails. It's failing big time.
Right, right.
All right, so according to this, the music, movie, and video game industry are asking for nearly 100 million kroner, which is equivalent to Australian 18.16 million.
Which is not a hell of a lot.
Which is what? Are we talking 20-something million US?
It's about 23 million US.
Yeah. So they're actually looking for damages and interest for losses incurred by the tens of millions of illegal downloads. But...
No, rubbish. What am I talking about? Did you say 18 million
Australian? No, it's actually less.
18 million Australian? You're talking about 13 million US.
Right. But... I just hit my microphone. But what's interesting is that if found guilty, the four defendants, who I'm not even going to attempt to say their names, they are Swedish names. And Jake, would you like to have a go at these? It's Frederick...
Sorry.
Let's say Frederick, Gottfried, Peter, and Carl.
Yep.
There you go. The last names are too hard. Mm-hmm. All right. But it claims that if they are found guilty, the four defendants each face sentences up to 2 years in jail and fines on top of the actual damages.
Well, it's a test case, isn't it?
It is. And this is the thing. This is a very...
Mind you, this is Swedish law. This is Swedish law.
Yeah, but Sweden is covered under the EU. Mm. So this is, and remember, they've been protected by Swedish law all this time. I think it's because Sweden wanted to enter the EU. That's why they're going.
No, this is a farce, and I'll tell you why it's a farce. I mean, it needs to be tested. This is a thing of conscience. It's a thing of conscience because at the end of the day, you know, all right, people need to learn to support their favorite artists and so on and so on. I think it's in many ways you could qualify it by saying it's all on a case-by-case basis. This is never going to go away. You take away the Pirate Bay, someone else will fill its shoes.
Someone else is going to take
no
it.
No problems.
Look, Pirate Bay is not the only BitTorrent client, BitTorrent site out there. There are millions of them, and they're never going to shut this down.
No.
I mean, that's the thing. But they're going after Pirate Bay, and I think they're really going after Pirate Bay more or less because Pirate Bay has openly battled them. Pirate Bay, they would get, like, if you go to the Pirate Bay right now, they actually have, well, they used to have on their site. I don't know if they still do. But
so they wantonly go to court?
No, no, they're basically saying you'll never be able to get us. And this is what's really made them targets. Because what they would do is people like Microsoft would send them letters saying cease and desist.
They've held out the red flag.
Yeah, well, in the letter it actually says do not publish this letter as private correspondence. They wouldn't publish it up on their site.
Nice.
And they would basically, they had a whole site about this.
Nice.
Basically saying, nan, 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 nan,
yeah,
well, nan, 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 has just been, you know, we're going to fuck you from behind. But that's a whole different...
With a sandpaper glove.
So...
Horse grind, of course.
We will keep our eyes
Thank
on
you to Bunnings. Oh, Walmart in the States. Sorry.
Walmart in the States. We will keep our eyes on this, I think, because I think this is going to be a very interesting case. Okay. Facebook.
The old FB.
All right. Can you fill us in on this, Jacob?
Apparently, Facebook have some new terms and conditions, of which they've put up the front of each person's Facebook account. Evidently, they're begging people not to go away because there's some issue with their EULA, that's their end-user license agreement, that has become unsavory to Facebook users. But at the end of the day, David, as I say, this is a wonderful tool, but people who use it seem to feel that they own it. And the fact is it is owned by Facebook. It is your choice to put personal information onto that site, of which in their end-user license agreement it says they can go and sell in any way, shape or form that they want to, basically. And that is exactly what they do. Therefore, the user has no reason to complain because it really, read the terms and conditions, caveat emptor, ladies and gentlemen, buyer beware, buyer beware.
Okay, but there is the issue, which is why people are leaving, which is that was not the conditions when they signed up. Facebook has turned around and said, these are our new conditions, and everybody who's up there saying, hey!
Mind you, they've reverted to their old conditions while all of this has been
thought out.
What's
happened is, and this is where I think this is funny.
And Mr. Zuckerberg has just paid out $100 million, by the way, to the original creators of Facebook, which it wasn't called Facebook, of course, which he pilfered openly and made into Facebook.
Yes, and he's had to pay out for it. But what's interesting about this...
100 million US, that is, ladies and gentlemen.
What's interesting about this is apparently they have backtracked on the terms and conditions.
What does it say that?
This is in this article. It says that they have backtracked over the terms and conditions. And in fact, people who are deleting their accounts now get confronted with this little message that actually says, deleting due to change in terms of service. It says... Are you deleting because you are concerned about Facebook's terms of service? This was a mistake that we have now corrected. You own the information you put on Facebook, and you control what happens to it. We are sorry for the confusion.
We are sorry for this break in transmission. So, we'll resume programming in just a moment.
So they have completely backtracked on all of this. So you don't have to run away and immediately delete your Facebook account. Although, I will put a caveat to that and say, just remember... Flickr, Facebook, MySpace, any of these things. It's exactly what Jake just said. If you are putting your stuff onto a public service where they're paying for all the fees and it's a free thing, read the terms and conditions carefully.
Absolutely.
Because Flickr actually has in their terms of service that they can do whatever they want with your photographs.
And so, let's put it this way, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to be waving a flag for a Facebook, so to speak. I'm actually waving a flag for the user to use your brains. Because at the end of the day, you can just about load up any photo you like to be on your image, your which can be a lot of the time copyright infringement, and generally they leave it alone.
Well, you actually had a Derek and Clive picture on your Facebook at one point.
I had a Derek and Clive picture. I had a picture of Terry Jones as Mandy from The Life of Brian, but I mean, if you were to have a look at my Facebook account, you would see that I am a fan of all of those.
But technically,
I'm still breaching, and they didn't say anything. That's to right. me. So, it's a bit of give and take. Facebook is a very useful tool for keeping in contact and for so many reasons. Obviously, I'm being rhetorical, but at the end of the day, what it's really for is information gathering for them to use for the advertising market. It is as simple as that.
Absolutely. And while we're on that term, we'll make a little segue here and basically say that you can follow me on Facebook if you want to. I always post on Facebook when new shows go up or any new information. So it's we use it as a tool, as a marketing tool.
Can you see who's following you?
Yes, I can.
Oh, can you?
Yeah.
Any guys sort of, you know, wearing trench
coats? No. I don't have any stalkers yet.
Oh, stalkers.
Right. I don't have any stalkers yet. Anyway, so you can follow. I'm David McVeigh on Facebook. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am David McVeigh on Twitter.
Yes, you've got a few Twitters there. Now, I believe, who was it you were telling me who's got a huge Twitter list there? Oh, Stephen Fry.
Stephen Fry is huge on Twitter. He's become this bit of a phenomenon, really. And he's a man who doesn't like people, so it's very interesting.
He's a bit of a misanthrope, but he makes comments nonetheless. Now, he's made appearances, you were telling me, on... or he hasn't. It's Robert Llewellyn who plays Crichton.
MacBreak Weekly.
Tell us about that.
He was on MacBreak Weekly just recently. He's actually been on a few times. Leo and him get along quite well. But it was very interesting because apparently he is he's doing a vidcast or vodcast, depending on which way you want to say it.
This is a great idea.
Because he came up with this idea that most people just sit and chit-chat when you're sitting in a car and you're driving for long drives. You have these little conversations that go nowhere, basically. And so he thought, what a great idea for a podcast or a vidcast. So basically he put a camera in a car and he invites people to get in the car with him and they drive around for an hour. And they just talk in the car. And I think this is fabulous. And apparently one of the guests he's getting on is Stephen Fry. So I think it's in iTunes. I think it's called like Car Chats or Car something. Anyway, so I'm going to find it.
I'd like to listen to it myself.
I think it'd be kind of cute. As I was explaining before, Jacob and I were having a talk, I have a bit of a problem with vid or vodcast. Can we have a consensus on how to say this? Is it vidcasting, vodcasting, whatever it is?
Anyway, well, let's call the whole thing off.
Let's call it off. Anyway, I have a problem with video podcasts because they require you to actually sit and watch them.
Yeah.
Whereas with audio podcasts, it's like old-time radio shows. I put them in my ears, my earbuds, my iPod, and basically I can listen to it while I do the dishes and while I clean the house and while I wander
around.
While
you're using your eyes for other things.
While I'm doing other things, absolutely. And so I can do two things at once or multitask by listening to audio. So, video podcasting hasn't really grabbed me yet as something that I listen to a lot of or watch a lot of because I just don't have the time, you know. But audio, love audio podcasts. I listen to lots of them.
How many podcasts do you listen to a week?
Oh, anything between 12 and 15, probably.
Mm. There are some out there that I believe listen to 25. How people
I know. I came across
this. You had a life, ladies and gentlemen. How do you do it?
Look, I came across this list because we get referrals on our website to tell us where people are coming from. And I saw this one. I thought, who's that? So I clicked on the link, and it was from a forum post where people were putting, these are the podcasts I listen to each week, and everybody was putting their lists of podcasts. And one person, the reason why you got for a referral, because we were on one of their lists, which I'm very happy about. Thank you very much. And but that person had on their list, quite literally, 25 to 30 podcasts that they listen to.
Tell me something, David. Have you ever come across, and you've got me going now, I'm going to do a little bit of research, maybe for the next show, what sort of cultural shift has occurred in the past couple of years due to the advent of podcasts in particular? And what effect is that cultural shift going to have in the future? There is so much information that's been given, so much discussion that is occurring now that didn't occur before. Well, it did occur, but it occurred in meetings or... Do you know what I'm saying? It's so easily accessible. What do you think is going to happen in the future?
I think what podcasts have done have brought back old-fashioned radio.
Mm.
I think a lot of people...
I'm not disagreeing with you, but yeah. How so? Explain to listeners
why
you think
what's happened is... Over time, we have become a television generation to start with. So radio was falling to a smaller market. Most people listen to radio because they want to listen to music or what have you. And really, you have to go searching for talkback radio. You've got your ABCs and what have you. But really, most people are listening to radio because they play it in the background, they play their music and what have you. I think what's happened with podcasts are not only is it returning us back to the concept of talk radio, where people just sit around and talk about ideas and stuff, but it also gives the listener control. So you can sit there and say, I don't want to just listen to ABC radio all day where they might talk about this or talk about that. I would rather listen to This Week in Technology or Filmcast or what have you, because they're talking about what I want to hear about.
Do you think as a consequence...
I think it's better. It's like TV on demand.
I was just about to say, it is radio on demand, and do you think that... And free-to-air radio is going to change dramatically as a consequence of this as our generation gets older, because as the older generation goes, we become the older generation, and as a consequence, free-to-air radio will change. Now, something that we don't have here yet, although it's being trialled, and I love, actually, because mm-hmm. I've been able to hear some of it, which is satellite radio in the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
The amount of satellite radio, a lot of our US listeners would already know about this. You can listen to Bob Dylan and his radio show, for example.
Yes.
You can listen to Howard Stern, and I do love him so, as a libertarian speaking. There is one recommendation I want to make to our listeners out there, and speaking of talk radio, is Eric Bogosian's talk radio, which, of course, the film was directed by Oliver Stone.
Yes, which is a good segue.
True story about Alan... Now, this is terrible. I can't think of his last name. He was a shock jock who was shot outside his home by a listener in Akron, Ohio. And I'm giving a plug for myself here. Was the I played the character in the Australian premiere of Talk Radio back in 1995. We did a 2-week season, I think it was. Maybe it was 3-week season at a theatre called The Stage in Smith Street in Collingwood.
And, the stage,
and I was actually on stage for 2.5 hours talking nonstop, which is nothing new. Why I mention it is a very important piece, we're going to talk about another Ollie Stone.
We
film,
are
as a matter of fact.
Actually, that's actually one of our feature reviews today is Oliver Stone's latest, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
So let's not jump the gun on that one.
I digress. Go ahead.
As far as I can tell with podcasting, or as far as I can tell with basically all forms of old media, we seem to be seeing a fundamental shift in old media.
Yep.
There's already been talk that printed newspapers and magazines as we know them are on the decline and on the way out. Big news about, was it 3 or 4 weeks ago, or a month and a half ago, was that PC World magazine, which is one of the biggest tech magazines in America...
Sure.
Ceased publication. They basically...
Oh, excuse me?
They ceased print publication. They're only on the web now.
Cool.
Well, cool for some.
Well, hang on. What about this, David? There is... Which publisher is it here in Australia or chain of bookstores here that is doing it? They've got a machine that...
Angus and Robinson.
It's Angus and Robinson here in Australia. They actually have a machine. You can go and demand a deleted book from their list going back, I think, 60 years or 70 years even. The things that say you want a book from 1971 that's been deleted, and it'll actually print and bind it there on the spot within minutes. Now, why couldn't you do the same with PC World? Any magazine?
No.
You go in, you go, I want this magazine.
No, we don't need
Because we still like to hold these.
Yeah, we don't need any of that, though, because where the thought pattern is we're not talking about traditional books, because traditional books, there's something tactile and collectible about real books, right? But magazines and publications like newspapers and so forth, which are basically disposable.
I'm going to go into book collecting, I think, because I can see what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, basically, they're all saying that things like Amazon's Kindle reader and
what's that?
The digital,
that's their reader.
Digital reader, which Kindle 2, by the way, is being released this week or next week.
Do you have Kindle 1?
No, because you can't get it in Australia, because we're at the asshole end of the world.
Of course we are, David.
Anyway, so...
And how stinky it is.
I know, but the Kindle is basically, they're saying that this is the future. I mean, think about this, Jacob. Newspapers really are a waste of paper, to start with, because it's something we read and then throw away, right? And we're producing all these newspapers. Newspaper readership is in decline. Most people are reading it online.
True.
Okay, so, now how's this? The Kindle in America, you subscribe to, I don't know, the New York Times, okay? Mm. Every night, 3 o'clock in the morning, the New York Times is delivered wirelessly to your Kindle. So in the morning, you wake up and you've got the full newspaper in your reader and you can just flick through the New York Times on your reader.
That's fine, David, but I think you'll find there's quite a diverse community out there, and there are people who, for sight reasons or other reasons, actually like something tactile. Now, going back 10 years ago, I believe it is now, I first saw the beginnings of a roll-up screen, you know, relating to a digital newspaper.
Yeah.
It was like a roll-up LCD or whatever it is, or OLED or whatever they're using now or attempting to use now. What's happened with that? Have you heard anything about that?
See, it's all been taken over by something like the Kindle. Now, the Kindle, the reason why the Kindle
because
is...
Because that was physical. You see,
the reason what makes the Kindle so compelling is the fact that it's a wireless device.
Yeah.
For people who can't read very well, it will read for you. It actually has text-to-speech.
But how efficient or
not bad, actually. I reckon it's not bad because if you guys listen to some of the modern text-to-speech, it's pretty good. It will play MP3 files so you can listen to podcasts on it or music.
Does it sound like Stephen Hawking? I mean, no offense to Stephen. I mean, what a wonderful
That's been the question.
A member of the community.
But the most important thing about it is that it uses this new thing called digital ink. Now, digital ink is this new type of screen that's basically black writing on white. It is non-reflective, so you can use it in the sunshine and so forth. And apparently it's very easy to read. It's very easy to use and navigate. It's, as I say, it's wireless. It's easy to get new books for. They're talking about everything being available on Kindle eventually. This is going to be, I think we are seeing a fundamental shift. Once the world can start using a Kindle or start getting the Kindle or Kindle-like devices, then we are going to see the end of print newspaper. Wall Street Journal is already talking about the fact that Wall Street Journal actually came out with an interesting statistic. They actually said in a report that if they were to actually give every single one of their subscribers a Kindle and 1 year of feed, that is cheaper than producing the newspaper.
I'll believe it when I see it.
No, they were not going to do this. They're saying what they're doing.
I understand, but I mean, it would be good that they do it just to see.
Apparently, the cost of ink and paper. And the actual printing process and the delivery methodology of trucks and diesel and all is so expensive, it has become, it has gotten to a point where newspapers and magazines cannot sustain.
How much landfill would you be saving by doing that?
Absolutely. So I think we are seeing the demise of printed publications.
I hope you're not, right.
Not books. Mm. I think there's always going to be a room for book collectors and so forth. Because let's face it, there is something about a book. But I think magazines, newspapers, periodicals, what have you, catalogs, you know, all this stuff.
Are you going to try and tell me, I'm sorry, I'm playing devil's advocate here, that at supermarket stands where all the schmutz is, that, you know, that they will remove that and expect people to stand there before being served reading their Kindles?
Interestingly enough.
I don't think so.
Interestingly enough,
people
you mentioned
like
that.
People like picking up the schmutz.
Now, interestingly enough,
your new Wankly, your news of the world, whatever the
interesting,
fuck it is.
Interesting you should mention that, because in the latest, the one back of This Week in Technology, they were addressing this exact topic. And one of the guys who is a specialist in the field of economics basically said magazines will basically dry up and to the point where they're all digital, except for a very small niche.
Bingo.
Which will be the World Weekly News
and the ones that sit
on the end cap next to a register.
Yep.
Because they're the ones that people just pick up and look at while
they're...
But you know what? How many people actually buy those?
Oh, lots of them.
You know?
Lots of them buy it.
Read it while you're waiting in line and then put it back before you get to the counter? You know, who knows?
Anyway, to go and see who's had a vagina lift recently and this sort of thing. I digress. I'm sorry.
All
David,
right. So
on.
We've talked Facebook. We've talked Sol Trujillo. Let's do a
Madonna?
Little.
Let's
do a little. What are we looking at? So I've got news articles. I'm just folding up some pages here. All right. Last week, I reported on this show. We're going to go into a little bit of film news here, because last week, I reported on this show that there had been reports the Wachowski brothers were being courted to do a Superman reboot.
It's bullshit, isn't it?
It's bullshit. All right? It is confirmed as of, I don't know, today or yesterday. Slash Film posted an article basically saying that they have from two independent sources that this is now confirmed. They have never been approached.
Yeah.
Okay? So there you go. Rumor killer. Wachowski brothers are not offered Superman. Now, the second piece of rumor that has been kicking around is that Mickey Rourke was going to be in Iron Man 2.
Another piece of bullshit?
No. Apparently, they were interested in him to play Whiplash.
I think he would have been incredible.
The fans were all saying that they wanted him to play the Crimson Dynamo, but apparently it was Whiplash that he was being thought of for.
Yeah.
Mickey Rourke himself has now come out and said that he is not doing Iron Man 2. So he is not in it.
What's he doing instead?
But, and this is where my brain almost exploded. He has now confirmed that he is in Sylvester Stallone's The Expendables.
Oh, no.
What the hell's that? Why would he join that?
Look,
anyway.
This is the thing. He's wacky.
He's wacky.
He's wacky, so he's going to make some wacky moves. I mean,
it is true.
Hey, did anyone see Joaquin Phoenix on Letterman? You saw.
Oh, God.
Talk about wacky. Now, there was a rumor that indeed he and Casey Affleck are making a mockumentary. And this is why he looks the way he does. He came onto Letterman and was just mumbling and burbling, and he's got this full beard, and you know, and at the end of it, Letterman looked at him and said, "Well, I'm sorry you couldn't be here.
I'm sorry you couldn't be here tonight."
Which he had a chuckle. He said, "No, he's a funny man."
He was out there.
Dear, oh dear. Go to YouTube, ladies and gentlemen. You'll see it there.
You'll see it there. The whole clip is available on YouTube. It is actually spooky in many ways.
I don't know what to make of it, whether it is a mockumentary. I believe it. And whether it wasn't, he's just weird. I mean, you say he's been weird the whole time anyway.
He's always been a little bit strange. Now, here's a little piece of news for you. Now, this is speculation at this point.
I love him in Walk the Line, by the way.
Oh, yeah, fantastic, fantastic. Here's a little bit of speculation. Robert Rodriguez, who I am a big fan of, apparently is...
Oh, El Mariachi?
El Mariachi, yep, Desperado, yep. Oh, yep, yep, Sin City, yep, and so forth,
yep,
is apparently prepping up a live-action version of the Jetsons.
That's got to be a rumor and bullshit.
Well, no, apparently it says here, it says that this is a project...
Have we not got over this rubbish?
No.
Please, has America not got over this? You know,
apparently not.
What? With who? I mean,
and do you know? And do you know?
Let
me
guess. They're going to have John Goodman as George Jetson.
And do you know why they're not going to get over this remake nonsense? Because people keep going to see it. Mm. If people keep going to see remakes and reimaginings and re this and re that, then the studios are going to continue to make them. Friday the 13th, the remake, opened this weekend in America and made over $51 million in its first weekend.
Yeah.
This is why
that I can imagine. No, that I can imagine. But the Jetsons, please. I mean.
Anyway,
who's your pick? Who's your pick? I mean, who would play Jane? Tina Fey? We're not even up to that stage yet.
He says here in this article from Slash Film is that they've been shooting some tests for the Jetsons, and Robert Rodriguez has said that he's quite giddy about how it's coming together. So this comes on the fact that he's also reporting, or it's now been confirmed, that he is actually working on a new sci-fi action thriller called Nerve Wrackers.
Nerve Wrackers.
Yeah.
You're telling me.
For the Weinstein Company. So
naturally. Nerve Wrackers. So Robert Rodriguez.
Actually, it's actually...
With the Weinstein Company, Nerve Wrackers.
I take that back. It's actually called Nerve Wracker.
Nerve Wracker.
Okay, Nerve Wracker.
Right.
Now, while we're on the subject of... we're on the subject of films in production, Ridley Scott... was recently interviewed.
Fuck, it's getting steamy in this studio.
No kidding. Yep. It gets a bit steamy in here. Yep. Ridley Scott was recently interviewed about his Robin Hood project. This Nottingham where...
I worry about
Russell Crowe was going to play...
I worry
Russell Crowe was going to play dual roles.
Please tell me he is not playing dual roles.
He is no longer playing dual roles.
Oh, thank God.
Ridley Scott came out and basically said that they're renaming the film Robin Hood, not Nottingham.
That's a shame.
Because they want to focus on the main character, and Russell Crowe is only playing one character. Now, the biggest problem that I have with this is that Russell Crowe is going to play Robin Hood.
Oh, dear.
Wrong casting. Absolutely. He should be the sheriff.
Absolutely. The sheriff.
He should be the sheriff. Absolutely. He is not Robin
material. In fact, why don't they make it the sheriff? If they want to have a Rusty as a lead, make it the
sheriff. I would have made it about, the sheriff.
Look, if The Dark Knight really is about the Joker, why can't...
Absolutely. Anyway, so that's the latest on that. So they are moving ahead with that, and it's now just called Robin Hood, and he isn't playing dual roles. So until we hear more about it, I think we've put Robin Hood to bed for a while. Okie dokie. The big news of the week. Oh, before we do that, one last thing, a little mini review here. It's actually kind of geek related. Joss Whedon's new television show just premiered.
Dollhouse. I beg your pardon. Have you seen it?
I did. I watched the pilot the other day, and I got to tell you, I was a little disappointed.
Tell us, for the Philistines out there like myself, tell me about Dollhouse. What's the story?
All right, well, the story of Dollhouse is basically this very...
Because Joss Whedon has a lot of followers, doesn't he?
He does. He's got a huge following. The Whedonverse, they call it. Mm. Basically, he is the creator of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, and Firefly.
Yep. Firefly, I love.
Yeah, he's got this really obscure sense of humor. His work is always very clever, and so forth. Now, his new series, he's returned to Fox Television with this new series starring Eliza Dushku, who was Faith in Buffy, for those who don't know. And there is a piece of Eliza Dushku news, which we'll come to in a second. But I just got to say that Dollhouse is, start from the beginning. Dollhouse is basically about a super secret organization where they have these women who basically they've erased their memories, stored them for a period of time, and then people hire this organization to take care of things for them. What they do is they reprogram the girl to be whatever they need her to be. So in like the pilot episode, they needed a hostage negotiator, and they've created a perfect hostage negotiator.
So they upload
the personality into
and
the girl.
And then they use them in a wanton way, like a military, in a military sense.
Except it's private. And they'll do anything. So you can, you know, everything
so
from...
So they give them their...
There's kind of hints at the beginning.
They plant their roles.
There's kind of a hint at the beginning that you could even hire these girls as escorty type girls if you wanted to. But anyway...
It's got a replicant...
It does. And the problem, and you know, the story is kind of interesting and everything else. The biggest problem I have with it is it takes itself very seriously, and there's no sense of humor to it at all. And Joss Whedon is always known for his sense of
humor.
Big
time intrigue. Yeah.
And it just doesn't.
Too serious.
Yeah, jury is out. I will watch a few more of it. It did actually do 2 million viewers on its premiere, apparently.
Where?
Fox in America. And apparently Fox was quite happy with that, so it will move ahead
That's
for the moment.
That's not huge in
but
the States.
It's not,
I mean, it's good.
But apparently Fox
See,
was...
See, we had 3 million viewers for Underbelly here.
Yeah, but apparently Fox was only expecting like 1.5. So it's not bad. We'll see what happens.
You reckon it's a sleeper, do you? You reckon it'll grow?
Possibly. We will see what happens in the next couple of episodes. Remember, you can never really judge. You can never really judge a show by its pilot. Most shows need a few episodes to warm up.
Yeah. It's very rare that a pilot hits. Deadwood is an exception to the case. The Deadwood pilot is extraordinary.
Well, nominated for an Emmy.
Extraordinary.
All right, so that leads us on to Eliza Dushku, who now...
Russian, originally?
Well, I assume. I don't know what her heritage is. But Eliza Dushku, who I quite like...
Dushku with the Tushka.
Dushku, which I quite liked in Buffy. Mm. She then, after Buffy finished up, she went into a series called True Calling for a while. But now, what has happened is in Iron Man 2, the character of Black Widow. Now, we reported this last week that Eliza Dushku was really lobbying to play Black Widow. Now, what had happened was
she was, or her agent was.
No, she was. Emily Blunt was cast as Black Widow. Fox has pulled an option on Emily Blunt, saying they want her for Gulliver's Travels, so she's moved on. And Eliza Dushku basically said, please, let me do Black Widow because I can speak Russian. I learned it for Dollhouse.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kick ass like because I did Buffy and blah, 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 and I can do this. Anyway, it looks like it's all failed because the latest casting rumor says that Scarlett Johansson may be being cast to play Black Widow.
That's a bigger player there.
It's a much bigger player. So, but she's wrong. Casting-wise, she is wrong for Black Widow completely.
Who's Scarlett Johansson?
Scarlett Johansson. Mm. She's completely wrong for it. Eliza Dushku would have been. Emily Blunt was perfect.
So has this been locked down?
Not yet. So we still wait on that. Okay, now, the biggest news of the last day or so. Actually, no, the last day. It came out today because the Oscar winners have apparently been leaked. And I say apparently and allegedly because there is no confirmation that this is real. But apparently somebody has leaked the Oscar winners for this year, for the Oscar ceremony that is going to be next week.
Right.
Somehow, through the magic of the internets, somebody says that this is the list of winners that has been leaked because apparently the tallies or the votes were actually counted last night.
Look, this goes on every year to a certain extent where, you know, people say that they're in the know. But now more than ever, I mean, tell me something, David, correct me if I'm wrong, last year's viewership of the Oscars was in the shit.
It was. The last couple of years have been going downhill.
So you would think that there might be a deliberate leak. On the other hand, it's a very predictable year.
Well, it is a very predictable year. Now, my personal feeling on this is that I think this leak is a fraud. I think because as somebody points out in the comments, you know, there's comments on the bottom of this. If you want to see this list, we're going to talk a little bit about it now.
By the way,
spoiler alert.
Oh yeah.
Just in case it is real, okay? Oh, but I don't think it is, so don't worry. It's Oscars 2009.
Wait a moment. So Oscars
2009 leaked.
I'll go leaked.
.blogspot.
Leaked. Yes.
.com. It's a big long URL. You sure you want to type all this out?
Let's have a look.
/2009/02/Oscars-winner-list-2009-leaked_17.html.
I've got it right here.
All right.
I've got it right here.
This list is so predictable. According to this list, Mickey Rourke takes leading role, Heath Ledger takes supporting role, Kate Winslet takes leading role, Amy Adams takes supporting role. Best animated feature film, WALL-E, art direction, Dark Knight, cinematography, Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah, yeah.
This is all completely predictable. Directing and
costume design, Benjamin Button.
Directing and best film, both to Slumdog Millionaire, which is exactly what I predicted anyway. Best documentary feature, Man on a Wire.
Dave, here's one for you.
Yeah.
film editing milk, but in Bruges.
For original screenplay. Actually, that was unexpected. Okay. But as I say, I don't think this is real anyway, so it doesn't matter. Now, my question was, there's been a big thing about the makeup category because a lot of people say that Hellboy was the true makeup film of the year, and according to this list, Curious Case of Benjamin Button wins makeup. But I guess they want to give it to Benjamin Button for something because it got eaten by Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah.
I personally think this list is a fraud. Somebody on the comments field, I think, was the one who's basically said, how easy is it to make a list like this and put it out?
Absolutely. It's easy. It's easy, and as I say, this year is pretty predictable.
It's pretty predictable. There's no verification on this. However, the interesting thing is, what they're saying is, it will be interesting to watch the Oscars to watch the winners' faces, because whether or not they actually know they're going to win or not. So whether if this list is real, they will not be surprised when they win.
You think you'll pick the faux surprise? These are actors we're talking about, Dave.
Yeah, you know, nobody's that good an actor. Not on the spot. Anyway, I don't know.
They all may sit there with a sort of sly grin on their faces the whole time.
Yeah, but, you know, it's that whole, oh, my God, really, me? I don't know.
Well, the real telltale is that they get up with no expression on their face.
Well, that's that too. Question is, on everybody's list is, will this affect the viewership of the Oscars on Monday, or will it increase the viewership?
No, I think it'll increase it.
I think it'll increase it because people will now be curious to see if the list was real or not. Hugh Jackman is hosting the Oscars. He has already been criticized for being a little bit
Leave him alone. He's a great guy. All right, he was in a flop of a film, but I mean, he really is a great guy.
I'm not doubting that, but whether he is Oscar host material...
We shall see.
He has hosted the Tonys many times and apparently been very successful.
Which is appropriate.
We will actually wait and see. Okay, that's it for our news. Jacob, we are going to review some films.
Oh, goody.
Now, the two films we are going to review, one of them opened in America months ago, and we're only just getting it now. And I actually spoke to the distributor when I went to see the review screening.
Who was the distributor?
It's Hoyts. Distributing it. Right. And I spoke to the woman and I said, it seems a bit late. And she said, yes, I know. We have been trying to get it out for a while now. Apparently, there's been some problems. And it's really interesting because in the press kit, all the actors say next scene in, and most of the films have already come out.
Yeah.
Because the film was taken for a while. Yep. The film is W, which is the story of George W. Bush. Now, have a listen to this. Here's a little bit of the trailer for you.
Mr. President, what place do you think you have in history?
In history? In history, we'll all be dead.
It's a lot of music and not a lot of talking. Anyway.
It's great. Can you turn my headphones up, please?
It's a great piece of music for this film. It really suits it. Okay, the film W traces the life of George W. Bush from basically being a troubled teenager through troubled young 20s through to him being the president in the White House and the attack on Iraq. Now, it doesn't conclude his White House because, of course, the film came out while he was still president.
Correct.
It goes up to basically where the Iraq mission wasn't as easy as they thought it was.
A lot of balls on behalf of Oliver Stone. Wouldn't expect anything less from him. I think the exposition was excellent. I think Josh Brolin as W is an incredible...
The highlight of the film.
It's an incredible performance. He should have been nominated for an Oscar for that role. The other roles are like caricatures, particularly Condoleezza Rice.
I thought Tandy Newton as Condoleezza Rice was awful.
Ridiculous.
Just awful. But I thought Jeffrey Wright as Colin Powell was equally as miscast.
Totally miscast. Let me say this, David. It's about... The most important thing here is it's about the relationship between George and his father, George Sr., who is also... I don't know who that actor is, but...
James Cromwell.
It's James Cromwell.
Who was in Babe and many other films.
Excellent in those roles. Here is an explanation for why George is the way he is. He is always trying to please his father.
He has daddy issues.
He's got daddy issues.
Big time daddy issues.
Child ego state, and, you know, that's shown very well. It is a very entertaining film.
It's a very entertaining film. I don't know. A lot of it is made, of course, with speculation, because, of course, behind closed doors, we don't know really what was spoken about. But let me just say that if some of this stuff was real, or these conversations took place. Yes. In particular, there is a scene where Dick Cheney lays out
Chaney played so incredibly well by George Dreyfus.
Richard Dreyfus. Which is terrifying, where he talks about empire building and the fact that there is no exit strategy to Iraq.
That's Ollie speaking there.
Yeah, it is. And it's just terrifying. Now, the film is, a lot of the dialogue that comes out of George W. Bush's mouth is based on real things that he has said, but put into different situations. So basically, he may not have said the line at exactly the place where he said the line, but it is something that was really said by George W. And Oliver Stone's kind of mixed and matched it up to make it work into a film. It is, it is an entertaining film. I've actually seen the film 3 times now. So
I've seen it once and I'll happily see it again.
Yeah, I've seen it 3 times
now. You can excuse the caricatures.
Yeah, and I actually enjoyed it much better the second time around. And the third time around, I actually found myself getting a little bit bored in places. So it's kind of a mixed bag of a film, because you sit there and go, with all good intentions, I mean, let's face it, Oliver Stone made this film to help get George W. Bush and the Republicans out of the White House.
Absolutely.
And that to that case, it's mission accomplished.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll say something, Dave. You know, when Little Geek will be old enough, I mean, he's already seen it, but I mean, when he's really going to start fathoming and understanding, you know, the whole political situation, and he asks you, what was George W. like? It's like, here, son, watch this.
Well, that's right. And I think Josh Brolin's performance, the film hinges completely on Josh Brolin, and I think he delivers in spades.
Yep.
And the fact that he wasn't nominated for an Oscar for that performance, but he was nominated for Milk, is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
I think there's a combination of things why the Academy snubbed. Reason being is George W. is now gone, and we're putting that all to bed, so to speak.
I think that's the problem with the Oscars, is they're so goddamn political.
And they're also, they've never really been for Stone. Really. I mean, I did give Platoon a lot of awards. There's no doubt about that.
He's won the Oscar.
I know, but he's been nominated many times.
I know. I think they actually do like Stone. Because remember,
they see him Hollywood, as a wowser.
But Hollywood is very liberal, so they will like him. Yeah. They will like the things that he says. Anyway, should you go see... Now, W opens next week. Should you go... Here in Australia, it opens next week. Should you go see it? I think if you like a good political film, if you like a film that captures a little moment in history that you can have a look at, if you like some good performances, not all of them are good, but if you like some good performances, Richard Dreyfuss is a standout. Josh Brolin is a revelation.
Who plays Barbara? It's I couldn't believe it. Didn't recognize her.
Ellen Burstyn. Ellen Burstyn playing Barbara Bush.
Let me tell you, she is perfectly cast.
Yeah, Ellen Burstyn is
one. Now I look back in retrospect, and my God, that's Ellen Burstyn.
But really, this film is about Josh Brolin. Mm. And Josh Brolin does a remarkable job. And it is worth the price of admission just to watch Josh Brolin go. Now, if you're looking for an absolutely accurate portrayal of history, I don't know if this is. I think a lot of it is going to be taking liberties around corners.
I think it's fairly close.
Yeah, but we don't know that. Because the problem is Oliver Stone is making a film of people who are still, who at the time were still in office. The secrets were still there in place. And
it's pretty stinky, Dave.
It's one of those films.
Pretty stinky.
It is one of those films that, in a way, I am sorry.
Not the film, the political situation.
Sure. But I am sorry that he made this film now, because if he had made it in a year's time, or even 2 years' time, he could have had a better resounding ending to it, because we would have had him leaving the White House, et cetera, et cetera. You know? So I just feel like, in one way, he kind of jumped the gun on it just a little bit, because a film that's about a real person or a real history, it would be nice to know how it finished. And that there is no real ending to W. And that's one problem that it has. And that's not a problem of Oliver Stone. It's a problem of the fact that his story didn't have an ending yet.
There's one telling scene, which I'm giving away here, where he's at a barbecue.
Spoiler alert.
thank you very much for that, Abby. He meets Laura for the first time at a barbecue. And there's this clear shot of him.
I still don't understand what that means.
He's stepping on a corn cob. And the first thing that went through my mind is, Ollie, that's a throwaway shot, or is a red herring, or you're
But it's but so what, deliberate.
What it is deliberate. Now, in my mind, and I'm very comfortable with this, is he is so oblivious to his surroundings, so narcissistic that he doesn't even know.
And I think that's very clear. Yes.
And that follows on in his leadership. That's exactly how he was a puppet to the advisors. The real person running the country was Cheney and Rove.
Absolutely. And the film goes, there's actually a scene in the film where he stops Cheney and basically says, Vice, keep your ego in check. I'm the decision maker. I'm the one in charge.
Correct.
Because, let's face it, Cheney was running it. Yep. I mean, Cheney just kind of kept planting ideas into his head. It was Cheney's war. It was Cheney's. It was Cheney. And Richard Dreyfuss is so slimy and evil as Cheney. Right.
He is perfectly cast. Him and Josh Brolin, look, ladies and gentlemen, please go out and see it. Do. It's a good
although story. One piece of absolute miscasting in that film I felt was Elizabeth Banks as Laura Bush, because I just felt she didn't quite have the Laura Bush feeling about her, and B, I don't know, Elizabeth Banks is better suited to things like Zach and Miri Make a Porno and so forth. She just didn't ring true to me. Yeah, I think you're right.
Did you ever see the Trey Parker and Matt Stone series That's My Bush? It was played on SBS.
I didn't actually know.
Oh, please. That was Timothy Bottoms playing W, and he actually looks like him. That's the scary thing. Yeah.
Okay. So
moving right along.
So, final words. Did we enjoy W?
Yes.
Yep. I think we both enjoyed W. I think we both came away from it thinking, yeah, that was all right. That was not too bad. Mm-hmm. I don't think it is a masterpiece.
No.
I don't think, in fact, 10 years' time, it will probably kind of disappear into the wilderness, really. And I think there will be a lot more written. We wait to see the real final history of George W. Bush. Mm. But just as a character piece of a guy who
incarcerated
really...
Incarcerated with any the other...
about a guy who is really dealing with the problems of overbearing family and so forth, I think it's very interesting. Okay, I have here a clip from our next film that we're going to review. Now, I think we can both agree that this was probably the better film of the two films this week. And here's a little bit of the trailer for Doubt.
I want you all to be alert. I am concerned about matters in St. Nicholas School.
Academically?
I was not inviting a guessing game, Sister Raymond. What's this, Mr. Conroy?
I don't know, Sister. They're all uniformly terrified of you.
That's how it works.
Boy! Come up here.
The dragon is hungry.
One, two, three.
It's a new time, sister. The church needs to change.
The point being?
We should be friendlier.
Father Flynn, he called Donald Miller to the rectory.
So, it's happened. We are going to have to stop him. Ourselves. What happened in the rectory?
Happened? Nothing happened. I had a talk with a boy.
What about?
Private matter.
He's 12 years old. What could be private?
Okay, that's a little bit of a taste of the trailer for the film Doubt. Now, we are reviewing this film a little bit late. This film actually came out several weeks ago. But because the Oscars are next week, over the last couple of weeks, we've been trying desperately on this show to catch up with all five Best Film nominees. This is the last.
I'm so happy I saw this film.
This is the last one, and we have now covered all five Oscar nominees for Best Film. Mm. Now, the film is set in 1964, based on a Pulitzer Prize-winning play by John Patrick Shanley. The film is written and directed by John Patrick Shanley. Now, John Patrick Shanley hasn't made a film in a while.
Not a long time.
He wrote Moonstruck.
Moonstruck, yeah.
Directed by Norman Jewison, and he wrote and directed a film called January Man with Kevin Kline. Mm. Now, as far as being a director, I don't think he's actually directed a film for a while, but he's probably been busy with Broadway and so forth. This film is very good. Mm. Now, I've seen this film twice. And the reason why I saw this film twice was the first time I saw it, I was actually very frustrated by it. And I came away feeling here is a film that resolved absolutely nothing, and I just felt incredibly frustrated by it. The second time I watched it, of course, because I watched it with you, I actually got a lot more out of it. And because suddenly you get a film that is posing a lot of very difficult questions, and it's not trying to put a point of view on it. It's basically saying, here's the questions, what do you think? Mm.
I think this is part of the frustration for you, David, and in retrospect, after thinking about it since last night, I would say the fact that John Patrick Shanley is very theatrical in his exposition.
He is, yes.
So that can be an issue for people. I mean, you get used to it. You do get used to it.
You can easily see this. You can easily see this film on stage.
Yeah,
you can see it just by its writing. Yep. It really takes place in only several locations. It's very simple. It's a very simple story. Basically, the story is in 1964 at a Catholic school, an overbearing nun who is the principal of the school decides that she believes that the priest who runs the parish has diddled a kid. With no evidence or anything to substantiate her claims, just her belief, she poses a one-woman crusade to basically destroy him.
Now, that's one part of the driving force. The other fact is the priest himself, played wonderfully by Philip Seymour Hoffman, and may I say Meryl Streep is extraordinary.
Meryl Streep's amazing.
Again, getting better and better. How can she top herself? I mean, I'll admit it. There are some films in history that she's done that have shitted me to tears. She really is just getting extraordinary.
She's getting better every single year.
She really is. So the point is that it's not just about her feeling or drawing conclusions that this priest has diddled one of the students. It is the fact that she is very orthodox and pre-Vatican II, whereas this particular priest is not a libertarian, but he's certainly a humanist, and is moving towards opening up the Catholic Church. So that is an extreme threat to her. What is shown is there is a duality. Obviously, men are very powerful within the Church, and women are secondary.
Yes.
And even though this is the irony of it, because in the Catholic Church, in my understanding, it is actually Mary who is at the top of the chain.
Absolutely. The hypocrisies of churches.
Absolutely.
Is amazing.
So the point is that they show a scene with all the nuns and herself having dinner, which is this very staid, stiff situation.
A beautiful contrast.
And then they show the men who are smoking cigarettes and drinking
and
so on
laughing.
And laughing and carrying on. And there are this is a film about intolerance and prejudice.
Absolutely.
But it is about, this is the beautiful thing about John Patrick Shanley, it's like a chess game, because both characters, or in particular Meryl Streep's character, is playing chess against the priest. But the fact is John Patrick Shanley is also playing chess with the audience.
Mm.
Because on the one hand, I mean, both Dave and I agree, we're like, he didn't do it. He didn't do it. But it's, how do you know he didn't do it? Because she's using exactly the same premise to say that he did do it.
But interestingly enough,
because she says, I know these people. I don't need to see the evidence.
Absolutely. And interestingly enough, we watched it with my dearly beloved wife, Katie, who still won't come on the show, but she watched it with us.
Eventually.
We're still trying to talk her into coming on the show. But she watched it with us, and she really enjoyed it as well. And she posed it, but she actually thinks he did do it. So that's the thing. The doubt is in place. Mm. And
that's why it's called doubt.
That's absolutely. And the overriding theme of this whole thing is there is doubt about everything. You cannot be absolutely 100% narrow-minded about your opinions, because there's always some sort of gray area.
Yes.
Now, I've got a clip for us.
Yes.
We're going to play this little clip. This is a clip where Philip Seymour Hoffman confronts Meryl Streep about all of this. We're not going to play the whole clip because it's quite long, but if you want to see it, you can actually get it at apple.com. All right, but here's a little clip from a confrontation between Meryl Streep and Philip Seymour Hoffman, and I think it really kind of highlights what we're talking about here.
Matt, come in.
A third party would be required.
Yeah, what was Donald's mother doing here?
We were having a chat.
About what?
A third party would truly be required.
No, sister, no third party. Me and you are due for a talk. You have to stop this campaign against me.
You can stop it at any time.
How?
Confess and resign.
You are attempting to destroy my reputation.
You keep opening my window. What are you doing in this school?
I'm trying to do good.
Even more to the point, what are you doing in the priesthood?
You are single-handedly holding this school and this parish back.
From what?
Progressive education and a welcoming church.
You can't distract me, Father. This is not about my behavior.
No,
it's about
yours.
This
is about your unfounded suspicions.
That's right. I
have
suspicions.
Just leave that. It's not important.
I will decide what's important.
And that is the crux of the entire film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that she is so set in her ways that it's her decision. She must bring him down. She is the one who's got absolutely no doubt in her mind that he is guilty.
Now, on top of this, let's go deeper. Let's go deeper. If we go deeper, David, it is mentioned. She mentions the fact that she was once upon a time married and her husband died in the war. And I put it to you that she is transporting her anger viscerally through the mode, through the MO of the Catholic Church. He is using it because at one point, and he accuses her, he says, you are not following the tenets of the Catholic Church. You're stepping outside the church. Mm-hmm. And she says, when it comes to the point of law, of you know, correcting something, you have to step outside the church. She takes her cross off.
Yep,
and she has it in her hand, look with a, in a fist like this, like she's got it, got it by the ball. Yes. So I put it to you because of that, and it's in the writing that she's living viscerally through this. It's such a beautiful, layered and complex film. Because and I'll tell you something else, ladies and gentlemen. Recently, I saw Scent of a Woman again.
Great film, I haven't seen that in a while.
1992, and I thought to myself, my God, because Philip Seymour Hoffman, I think it's one of his first big breaks, and he is playing one of the young students who gets, the student who's taking...
Of course he
young. But the thing is, Philip Seymour Hoffman looks so young, it's like, how fucking old is he? Because that was 1992. David, he's our age. He actually looks older than us, I would put it to you.
Wow.
He is 42.
Wow, he's. I think he's lived a bit of a hard life.
He can certainly act, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, he's very good. The film is excellent. It really is a good film. I actually have to say that I put off watching this film for a long time.
Why is that?
Because it looked...
Tell you what, the poster wasn't particularly...
The poster didn't do anything. No. It looked like a period film. No, and it is, because it's 64, but it looks like something that's like The Scarlet Letter or something. It's been unfairly called the bonnet film, because they wear bonnets and all this.
Well, she's got a bee in her bonnet, hasn't she?
She has a bee in her bonnet, and the film... I put off for a long time because I just looked at it and thought, oh, I don't know if I can take this. In fact, I'll go one step further and say, I had free tickets to this movie.
Did you?
And couldn't bring myself to go see it.
You didn't tell me.
No, you weren't around at the time. Oh. I don't know. But I don't know where you were, actually. I think you were in you were in New Zealand. That's right. And we just couldn't bring ourselves to go see it. And now that I've seen the film, it's been out for a while and I have seen the film, I wish I hadn't waited. Mm. I could have gone. Now, I don't think it is the best film of the year, so I don't think it's going to win the Oscar. I think Slumdog still takes that.
Slumdog's honor. Incredible. Look, this is a contender.
It is a contender.
If they pull it, I'll tell you what. This is something else that could happen. I'll tell you what, David. If this is a leak, Academy could turn around and say, "Well, fuck you," and turn things around and go for something like this.
But if this is a leak and they change things, then doesn't that go against the voting choices? They can't change it. That's the thing, unless they have a recount. Yeah. And they could do another. I don't know. I think it's a fake. Anyway.
It's a fake.
That list
anyway,
is a fake.
Let's come away from
that list. That list is a fake. If it was on Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences letterhead or something, I would think it was real. If it was even on the accountancy firm letterhead, it is a blog post.
Yeah, it's a blog post.
And how easy is that to do?
Yeah, anyway,
this film, had it been released in a year that Slumdog was not released, actually may have stood a chance.
Oh, absolutely.
It is better than Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
Benjamin Button is a good film.
Can't comment. I haven't seen it.
Benjamin Button is a good film. It was fun. I really enjoyed it. It's a fable and a fairy tale. And at the time, I thought, yes, this is a very good film. Mm. Now that I've seen this, I think this is a better film than Benjamin Button. Mm. The other two films that are nominated are The Reader and...
which I've read the book. That's Bernard Schlink.
Well, The Reader is a very good film as well. But I think this is actually... Because The Reader, if you take out Kate Winslet... Mm. isn't as good a film as this. Mm. So really The Reader is Kate Winslet's film. And
this
The Wrestler...
is an amazing exercise in casting.
It's fabulous. And exercise. The other person who we have not mentioned up until this point is Amy Adams. And Amy Adams, I adore.
Who is she?
Amy Adams was the little nun who... Sister James.
The school teacher.
Who was all very innocent and peaceful. Now, the reason... What makes her... Now, Amy Adams came really into our consciousness with the film... Junebug, where she was nominated for an Oscar a couple of years ago. And everybody went, who the hell is she?
Right?
Now, she went on and she was in Enchanted, the Disney film, and she was lovely and charming in that. And she's a really lovely, charming actress. And what makes this performance so special, she's been nominated in the Best Supporting Actor category, and I think she should win. Mm. And according to that leak, she has. But we'll see. What makes it so is she starts off so sweet and innocent, and the effects of this situation are driving her into the ground. And you can actually see it weighing on that line where she sits there and says, I can't sleep anymore. I feel that finger pointing at me, you know, and I just think that is just phenomenal. That is just this moment where she sits there. You can feel that she is just being destroyed inside because she just wants it all to go away.
Yep.
And she feels responsible because she brought it up. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a remarkable performance. There are lots of good performances in the Best Supporting Actress category this year. She is one of them. And the other one of note is Viola Davis. Viola Davis, and this is actually one of...
She plays the mother of the student in question, who happens to be Afro-American.
And this is actually one of the reasons why I watched the film a second time. Yeah. Because when I saw the film the first time, I thought, okay, that's fine, that's all good. And then I heard the nominations, and I went, wait a minute, Viola Davis, isn't she in the film for all of about 5 minutes? And I thought, why is
quality,
she...
not quantity.
Why is she being nominated? Well, she's actually in the film a little bit longer than 5 minutes. So the part is a little bit more substantial. But... in watching it a second time, her performance is riveting. It's like she burns a hole in the screen. She is fantastic in the role. And interesting piece of trivia, apparently Oprah Winfrey lobbied heavily to play that role. Yeah. And John Patrick Shanley wouldn't even see her.
He's a smart man. That's nothing against Oprah Winfrey as a performer. She is an extraordinary performer, and we must remember in The Color Purple. Nonetheless, she is so big and powerful now that I think it would have been detracting from the role. You would have been seeing Oprah and going, oh, that's Oprah, that's Oprah, yeah, that's Oprah, and it would have broken the chain. Viola is extraordinary. She is underplayed.
Yes.
She is, and beautiful writing, by the way, because she is not a caricature. She is not a stereotype. No, she doesn't have the stereotypical response, which actually throws Meryl Streep's character. Mm. And by the way, Meryl Streep's character, and I picked it straight away because I'm a fan of Grey Gardens. Grey Gardens, of course, is the famous Maisel's Brother documentary about Jackie Kennedy's auntie and first cousin who lived in a house in the Hampshires called Grey Gardens. Documentary team went in there in 1975. They're invited in. It's a 28-room mansion where they were living as recluses. That is little Edie Bouvier-Beale. Now, the accent is exactly like little Edie's accent. And guess what? The character's name is Sister Bouvier.
Which is very coincidence? We don't know.
Believe it or not.
All right, so I would highly recommend Doubt. I would actually say that it is actually a very good film. Do not be put off by the poster. It is not tedious. No. It is not homework. It is actually quite gripping. It is a very, very... it's a very entertaining film, it has a lot going for it. And just be prepared, though, by the fact that it really does leave a lot of questions unanswered, which to some people, they don't like that. What I did find amusing was in the... IMDb for the IMDb chat boards, which we all know are just absolutely horrendous. But there's a couple of posts on here. Basically, it starts with the post that this is the dumbest movie in the world. And it goes on with
this
people.
Is the tabloid of the internet. This is like going to the supermarket and having a look at those magazines, except in this case it's under IMDb.
This is basically armchair journalists by everybody who has an internet connection and whether they know anything about film or not. But the part that I have actually loved, there is one quote here, and I don't agree with it at all. It just made me laugh out loud, where somebody basically said, anyone who says this movie is pointless should go back and watch the first monologue by Philip Seymour Hoffman again. That monologue outlines the entire plot, point of the movie, although I would think that it is fairly obvious. The person responds, and this is the part that I love, a person goes by the handle of Skelk, responds with, "Watch it again? Are you on crack? I'd sooner be stabbed to death by a bunch of cranky midgets on LSD."
What imagery?
Which I think is one of the best responses to a film. I don't agree with it, but I think it is a wonderfully passionate response to a person who obviously did not enjoy this film.
It's like that old edict that, the worst thing that can happen to a film is no response.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, they always say, Phil Jeannot was the one who said in an interview about the film State of Grace, which I think is a great film. He said, "I don't care if you love it or if you hate it. I said, it's just if you come out feeling nothing, then I failed."
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and that's the thing. He wants to provoke a reaction.
Ladies and gentlemen, W, go and see. Doubt, definitely go and see.
You know, I think this is the first show that we have done in 26 shows where we both agreed on both films.
Is this the 26th show?
This is the 26th show.
God, time flies. So that is that 6 months in?
Yeah.
Can you believe?
I know. We started in June, I believe.
June last year. Well. We're both agreeing. Yeah, well, look...
June,
we're
taking
not,
go- a
we're not going to agree on everything.
I would hope we don't.
But we are friends because for oh so many reasons that we do agree on something.
I think there is a truthism, though, that you could say. Truthism. Is that a word?
Truthism?
Truthism is a good word.
You've been watching W, haven't you?
I think there is a truthiness.
I love
W broken English.
Yes, truthiness.
Anyway, I think there is something to be said about the fact that when a film is truly good or well-made, that actually poses some legitimate questions, that gives you a certain feeling back, I think you could say that there is a universal appeal of that film. I don't think there's going to be a universal appeal on.
No.
Doubt, it's very hard to say Doubt sucked. It is a good film. Whether you agree with what they're talking about or not, it is still a good film.
It's quite an academic film, and I can see it being on the syllabus in many high schools around the world, and as said by your lovely wife, probably be brought up in ethics lectures at colleges and universities for a long time to come.
And the question of whether or not he is guilty, we will never really know. And that is John Patrick Shanley's point completely. Yeah. Anyway, Jacob, we have to move on to The Little Geek to wrap this up.
Great.
I am going to say thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me again.
And I'm so glad you have come
thank
back.
Thank you for being here.
And I'm glad you're in the studio, actually, because we were actually going to Skype you in this week because you were actually away again.
We were,
but you've suddenly dropped into the studio. We thought, great, you're
here. Here I am.
We thought, let's record.
Let's go.
Let's hit that button and go.
I think I'll be here next week as well.
So I'm very glad that you managed to get in here for this wonderful show.
Thank you for having me. I can't wait to get out of here because it is so steamy. Sydney right now.
We are going to now play you the pre-record that we've got of The Little Geek, and then in that we actually do our sign-off. So we don't need to do our sign-off right now. I do have to say is thank you very much, Jacob, for joining me. And here is The Little Geek.
Go, Little Geek.
Hi, I'm John. I work at one of our Apple retail stores, and I'll be taking you through a guided tour of iMovie 09. iMovie 08 introduced a whole new way to organize, edit, and enjoy your videos. Now, iMovie 09 adds powerful yet easy-to-use features that can help take your projects even further. There are new editing tools that make it simple to put together clips quickly or fine-tune every scene. New animated titles and video effects that you can...
And why would I be playing a little bit of a guided tour of iMovie 09? Coming me into the studio with me right now is Nicholas McVeigh, the Little Geek. How are you?
Feeling
like no, that's true. You've got a little bit of a cold happening, don't you?
Yeah.
So we're going to make this fairly short, but I promised everybody that you would come on this week because I promised that we would talk a little bit about iMovie 09 and, in fact, the iLife 09 suite. Now, for those who don't know what iLife is, and that would make PC users, iLife is the package that comes with all new Macs. And it is also available for retail sale, which is how we purchased it. And basically, it is a suite of tools that help your digital life. So basically, it's iPhoto 09, iMovie 09, which is, of course, your favorite one, GarageBand.
iWeb.
And iWeb for creating web pages, GarageBand for creating music, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the new version, iLife 09, was just released, and we have been playing with it now for 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah.
Oh, my phone is making noise over here. I'll just move that out of the way.
I hope it's not mummy.
No, it's not ringing. It's just doing a pulse tone.
Oh.
Okay, so we've now had 2 weeks to play with it and test it out, and this was the one that you were eagerly waiting for. So, Nicholas,
even paid $50.
And you paid $50 towards buying it out of your own pocket money, which is very, very good. So now that you've had 2 weeks to play with it, what is your general feeling of iLife 09?
It's awesome.
Awesome. It is. It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, we'll just run down through the package very quickly. We'll save the best two for last. So before you jump in and say, but where's iMovie? We'll save it for last. First of all, the package contains GarageBand. And in the latest version, there haven't been that many changes to GarageBand. The biggest change, of course, is they've added the
music teacher.
They've added music teachers, downloadable music teachers. There's one starts you off, and there are some free ones, and you can also purchase some. And they basically help teach you how to play piano or guitar, which are kind of neat in their own right. And that's what they've basically done to GarageBand. The iWeb basically hasn't had very much done to it. They've added a few new widgets, things like countdown timers.
And a YouTube thing.
They've added buttons so you can easily add stuff to your web page. The actual fundamental operation of the program hasn't changed that much.
Yeah, because they just add lots of Google searches. And
that's right. They've added all sorts of...
And eyesight camera.
And the eyesight, the ability to be able to do video blogging straight off your eyesight camera, which is kind of neat.
I can make vlogs.
The iDVD got no update whatsoever.
Yeah.
It was basically just iDVD, which is, allows you to make DVDs from your movies and so forth. That didn't get an update at all, so really iDVD 09 really hasn't changed at all. Although what was interesting was that the week it got released, an update for iDVD got pushed through the automatic updates, which fixed a few things and added a couple of new themes. But really the program hasn't changed much. The two biggest changes came in the form of iPhoto
and
iMovie. Now, iPhoto was much more for me, and iMovie was much more for you.
Because I'm a nonstop movie maker.
You're a nonstop movie maker, and of course, I have a very large photo collection. Now, I actually run two different programs for photo management. I run Aperture.
And iPhoto.
And iPhoto. Aperture I use for my professional photos or for my portfolio stuff and so forth. And iPhoto I use for family photos.
Yeah.
And I was very impressed with iPhoto that they've added things like location awareness, so you can actually geotag your photos and so forth. But the biggest change, or the biggest thing they've added to it, is face recognition.
Face recognition
is awesome. It's just really amazing. And I've actually gone through and spent many hours.
Me too. I actually spent a couple, I think half an hour.
It's really amazing fun. You sit there and it finds faces, and then you just confirm whether they are the people or not, and then it finds more. Oops, I just hit my microphone.
I haven't got to that bit yet.
Oh, you're still analyzing.
Yeah.
Once it's finished doing the analyzing, it then gives you the list of things, and you can basically say whether that is the person or that isn't the person.
Oh, you mean to click on the tick?
That's right, you click on the tick, and then once it knows, it starts to get intelligent.
Yeah,
it starts
to
build.
I'm up to the tick.
You're up to the ticks. It starts to build that awareness so that it starts to be able to find, when you import new photos, it immediately starts finding those people. It is spookily scary how accurate it is.
Except it's bad for twins.
Bad for twins. And also, I've discovered that face recognition, and I guess this is good
because I tried Big Bear and David Bear.
I guess this would be good for people who are trying to hide, but face recognition seems to have a problem with glasses and beards, because I wear glasses and I have a beard. And in this situation... the lovely Katie just came in and said hi, if you heard a hi in the background. But she's gone now, so she's still hiding from us and not coming on the show. But what I found is it has trouble finding me.
Yeah.
Because it seems to see my beard and glasses and ignore me. And it just ignores me completely. It is getting a little bit better now. I've been training it. But it has trouble finding me. So that's iPhoto. And I am very impressed with some of the stuff they've added to it. But the biggest changes to the entire thing
is iMovie.
Oh, now, a little history. When iLife 08 came out, they changed iMovie completely.
Yeah.
And a lot of people weren't happy. And they offered for a while a free download of iMovie HD for those who were old users so that they could still have the features of iMovie HD. Now, what they've done with iMovie 09 is they've taken the fundamental structure of iMovie 08, which was very good. It's very easy to maintain home movies. But they've put back in a whole bunch of features that were from iMovie HD. So they put back in video
and
effects.
And they added green screen.
And they've added stuff like picture-in-picture and green screen and some new titling things and backgrounds.
And titling things are awesome.
Animated titles with backgrounds is great. The thing they've added some new little things like globes so that you can actually, if you're doing a travel video, you can put a starting position and an ending position. And it'll actually draw the red line around the map like in an Indiana Jones movie and stuff like that. It's very cool. And in fact, since I've had it, I've already edited one of our home movies, and it was pretty good.
It's the Blue Mountains.
Yeah, it was
your anniversary.
That's right. It was an anniversary movie that I've actually had captured for quite some time, but I haven't done it. The other thing that they have added to iMovie, which is terrific, is image stabilization. Now, what this does is if you've got some shaky camera work...
I haven't tried that yet.
Well, and the problem with it is that you first have to analyze, or as some people would say in the industry, you first have to cook your clips, where you install the clip, and it basically has to analyze the entire clip to analyze where the stabilization can occur. But then once you've done that, it stays there permanently, which means that if you want to put the stabilization onto a clip, you just click on it, and in real time, it smooths it out. You just got to invest the time. I'm actually editing another home movie at the moment.
What is the other one?
It's the one where we went on vacation to Queensland.
Interestingly
enough, there's so much footage that when I went to do the analyzing of the clips, it actually took something in the realms of 17 hours to analyze all the clips. But now it's done, I never have to analyze them again.
Oh, you actually did? I thought you said you'd turned it off or something.
No, no, I've done it now. I finally finished it, and I'm going to analyze our L.A. trip soon, but that's telling me it's going to take about 48 hours to analyze, so I put that aside for the moment. But the image stabilization, which was something that was available in Motion, which is the pro-level package, has now been put into iMovie, and it's very sweet indeed. So you've been putting together some films. Are you finding it easier now to edit in iMovie?
Yeah, I made this film, you know, when... Nana had a birthday.
Yep.
I took footage on that day, and then when we got iMovie i9, mm-hmm. I started editing it, and now it's finished.
Oh, excellent, excellent! It's so fast to put films together now. I'm a Final Cut Pro user, and of course, Final Cut Pro is a much stronger editing suite, definitely. But it takes longer to get stuff done. The iMovie suite is just very quick. You can throw together a home movie very quickly, and I'm very impressed with it. Now, what I'm also very impressed at, and this is actually kind of away from you, Nicholas, because this doesn't really apply to you as such, but for those out there who are interested in the licensing and so forth of it when you buy it, one of the initiatives that Apple has got going, and they do this on their operating system as well, and something that Microsoft could learn from, is that they have family pack pricing, which is just magnificent.
Yeah, it's for 5 computers.
That's right. So instead of going out and having to buy iLife for 5 different computers, you can buy a family pack, which allows you to install it on 5 computers in your house, and it's only like $50 more to buy that than it is to buy a single user license. And the same sort of thing applies to their operating systems. I think this is a great initiative, and Windows 7, when it comes out, should have some sort of family pack pricing, I think. We are now living in an age where most houses have mini PCs.
Yeah,
Our house alone, we have 4 Macintosh computers and 2 PCs. So, you know,
mommy's computer.
That's right. The lovely Katie has a PC as well. So, I mean, this is a world where we live in a place where we have multiple computers running at all times. So,
you mean 5 Macs?
5 Macs, but that one doesn't count because we're going to sell that one. Anyway, so I just wanted to get you on to find out what your opinions of iLife were, and I think the general consensus is that it's good.
It's awesome.
It's gold. Yay. All right. Well, we're going to sign off on this episode of Geek, actually, because we are running a little bit over time. We have to leave already. The time has come. So I want you all to remember that it's been a wonderful show today. I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah, me too.
And I want you all to go out and see more movies, because you don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will, and I think Little Geek will be back here with us again next week as well.
Hopefully.
We will see you next week. Bye-bye now.
Bye. Let me be.